Welcome to Thrilling Tales of Adventure. I'm Mardell, and it's time for another exciting chapter in Black Bartlemy's Treasure by Jeffrey Farnall. Chapter 16 tells how we were dogged by the Black Ship. I awoke in panic, and leaping up, groped in the pitch dark until my eager fingers closed on the haft of the sheath knife under my pillow, and with this naked in my hand I crouched waiting. I knew not what. For all about me was direful sound, groans and cries with wailings long drawn out, and shuddering complaint. Then all at once my panic was lost in sudden great content. And thrusting away the knife, I took flint and steel, and therewith lighted my lanthorn. Since now indeed I knew these dismal sounds, naught but the creak and groan of the stout ship, the voice of her travail as she rose to the seas. And as I hearkened, every individual timber seemed to find a voice. And what with this and the uneasy pitching and rolling of the ship, I judged we were well under way and beyond the river mouth. This, bethinking me of the damage we had sustained from the great black ship, set me to wondering, and so much that I reached for my lanthorn, minded to steal on deck, that I might know our whereabouts, and if it were day or night, since here in the bowels of the ship it was always night. So, as I say, I reached for the lanthorn, then paused as above all other sounds, rose a cheery hail, and under the door was the flicker of a light. Thereupon I opened the door, though with strangely awkward fingers, and thus espied Godby lurching towards me. "What, Martin Powell?" says he, sitting beside me on my berth, and setting down the food and drink he had brought. "Are you waking at last?" "Have I slept long, Godby?" "You've slept, Martin, for a full 30 hours.
30 hours, Godby.
Split me crosswise, else, pal."
"Mighty strange," says I, reaching for the flask he had brought, for I felt my mouth bitterly parched and dry, while adding to the consuming thirst my head throbbed miserably.
"Well, here we be, pal, clear of the river, this 12 hours and more. And, Martin, this is a true ship. Aye, by Oaky, a sailor. So true on the wind, so sweet to her helm, and Master Adam's worthy of her, blister me else."
"'Tis strange I should sleep so long," says I, clasping my aching head.
"Why, you am wise to sleep all you can, pal, seeing there be not better to do here i' the dark," says he, setting out the viands before me. "What, no appetite, Martin?"
I shook my head.
"Lord love ye, 'tis the dark and the cursed reek of this place, pal. Come aloft. All's bowmen. The fine folk hadn't found their sea legs yet, nor like to, while this wind holds, Martin. So come aloft, would God be."
Nothing loath, I rose and stumbled toward the ladder, marveling to find my hands and feet so unwieldy as I climbed. The higher I went, the more the rolling and pitching of the ship grew on me, so that when at last I dragged myself out on deck, it was no wonder to find the weather very blusterous, and with ever and anon clouds of white spray lashing aboard out of the hissing dark, with much wind that piped shrill and high in cordage and rigging. Being sheltered by the high bulwark, hard beside the quarter-deck ladder, I leaned a while to stare about me and drink in great draughts of sweet, clean air, so that in a little my head grew easier, and the heaviness passed from me. Ever and anon the moon peeped through rack of flying cloud, by whose pale beam I caught glimpses of bellying sails, towering aloft with their indefinable mass of gear and rigging, and the heel and lift of her looming forecastle as the stately vessel rose to the heaving seas, or plunged in a white smother of foam.
"She rides well, Martin,"
roared Godby in my ear. Ah, here's a duck of a ship, pal.
Where's Adam? I questioned.
To the gallant poop, Martin. Lord love ye, it's little sleep he's had since we hove anchor.
Harky, pal, he's got it into his head as we am being dogged.
Dogged, man, by what?
By that same great black ship as fouled us. He has so, pal. Roast me else. But come your ways.
So saying, Godby climbed to the quarter-deck, and I after him, and mounting the poop ladder, presently came upon Penfeather, peering hard over our lee.
Ah, it's you, shipmate, says he, drawing me out of the wind. Look yonder. Do you see aught of a rag of sail, Martin?
Following his pointing finger, I stared away into the distance across a tumbling spume of waters, vague in the half-light.
Do you glimpse aught, Martin?
Nothing, Adam.
Wait for the moon, shipmate, now.
Look yonder. As the light grew, I swept the distant horizon with my eyes, until all at once against the night I saw the sheen of distant canvas that gleamed and was gone again as a cloud veiled the moon.
You saw it, Martin?
Plainly, says I, whereupon he sprang away to the men at the helm, came the hoarse roar of speaking trumpet, and decks and waists below seemed alive with scurrying, dim figures, and now was a chorus of shouts and yo-hoing, as the faithful friend, obedient to his commands, swung off upon an altered course.
Godby, says Adam, beckoning us where he stood by the compass or binnacle. Looky as she bears now. We should be nigh enough yon cursed ship to learn more of her by peep o' dawn.
Aye, cap'n, and then?
Then you shall try what you can do with one of those long guns of yours.
Lord love you, cap'n, that's the spirit,
cried Godby, hitching joyously at his broad belt.
All I ask is a fair light and no favor.
And you have the middle watch, Godby man, so I'll get a wink of sleep, says Adam. But do you call me so soon as we raise her hull?
As for you, Martin, you'll have slept your fill, I judge.
And yet I'm plaguey drowsy still, says I. There's a spare berth in the coach, comrade, and you're so minded.
Nay, Adam, I'll watch a while with Godby.
Good. You've keen eyes, Martin. Use 'em, says he, and goes down the ladder forthwith.
And now, pacing the lofty poop beside Godby, I was aware that the faithful friend was dark fore and aft, and not a light twinkled anywhere.
How comes this, Godby? Says I, pointing to the dim shapes of the great stern lanthorns above us.
Captain's orders, Martin. We've been dark these 2 nights, and yet if yon craft is what we think, 'twould seem she follows us by smell, pal, smell. As how say you, says I, last night. She was fair to be seen, having closed us during the day. So out go our lights, and up goes our helm, and we stand away from her. At dawn she was nowhere, and yet here she is again, if yon ship be the same.
Which we shall learn in an hour or so, Godby.
Aye, Martin, if she don't smell us a-comin' and bear away from us. And yet she must be a clean, fast vessel, but we'll overhaul her, go in rumor or on a bowline.
Rumor? Speak plain, Godby, I'm no mariner.
Time will teach you, pal. Looky now, rumor means large, and large means free, and free means we're a quarter in wind, and that means going away from the wind, or the wind astarn of us, whiles on a bowline means close-hauled again the wind, do you see?
Godby, 'tis hard to believe you are that same peddler I fell in with at the hop-pole.
Why, Martin, I'm a cove as adapts himself accordin'. Give me a pack. I'm all peddler and joy in it. Give me a ship, and I'm all mariner to handle her sweet and kind and lay a course with any. though guns is my meat, Martin. 15 years I followed the sea, and a man is apt to learn a little in such time. So here stand I this day, not only gunner, but master's mate, besides of tight as a ship, maugre the crew as ever sailed. And all along of that same chance meeting at the hop pole.
And though a friend of Bim, you knew little of Adam Penfeather?
Little enough, Martin, Joel be no talker, but it do seem Joe was one of the Coast Brotherhood once when Captain Penfeather saved his life, and that years gone. So Joel comes home and sets up marriage, free trade, and what not. When one day Master Adam walks into the Peckamalt, and no whit changed for all the years save his white hair. Ah, here comes rain, Martin.
And wind, says I, as the stout ship reeled and plunged to the howling gust.
No, Martin, roared Godby above the piping tumult. Not a real wind, pal, a stiffish breeze. Jolly capful.
Slowly the night wore away, and therewith the buffeting wind gentled somewhat. Gradually in the east was a pale glimmer that, growing, showed great black masses of torn cloud scudding fast above our reeling mastheads, and all about us a troubled sea. But as the light grew, look how I might, nowhere could I descry aught of any ship upon that vast horizon of foaming waters.
Says Godby, venting huge sigh, there's to be no play for my guns this day, Martin.
Nay, but, says I, mighty perplexed, what's come of her? She could never have marked our change, of course, at the distance. And 'twas black dark beside, and we bore no lights.
Mayhap she smelt us, pal, as I said afore. Howbeit, 'tis beyond me. Cram me with rope yarn else.
Now as he spoke, up came the sun, turning lowering sky and tempestuous ocean to glory. Every ragged cloud became, as it were, streaming banners and wrought of scarlet and gold. Every foaming billow, a rolling splendor rainbow-capped, insomuch that I stood awed by the very beauty of it all.
I love the good kind earth, Martin, with its green grass and flowers a-peep. 'Tis a fair resting place for a man when all's done and said. But yonder, pal, ah, there's glory for ye. Many's the time I've watched it dawn and sunset, and mindin' all the goodly ships and the jolly lads as are sleeping down below at such times, Martin. It do seem to me as if all the good and glory of 'em came aloft for eyes to see a while. Howbeit, 'tis a noble winding sheet, pal, from everlasting to everlasting, amen. And by that same token, the wind's veering, which meaneth a fair weather spell, and I must trim. Meantime, do you rouse Master Adam?
And here, setting hands to mouth, Godby roared high above the wind.
Watch ho! Watch! Brace about! Rose away there!
As I cross the deck, up the poop ladder comes Adam himself, his red seaman's bonnet tight drawn about his ears, and a perspective glass under his arm.
"'Tis as I thought, Martin, says he, pinching his chin and scowling away to leeward. She changed course as we did.
Nay, but Adam, how should she know we changed, and the night so black?
Very easy, shipmate, by means of a light.
We bore no lights, Adam.
Nonetheless, someone aboard this ship signaled yon black craft by means of a lanthorn, 'tis beyond doubt.
And why should she follow us, think ye?
Why, I am a marked man, shipmate. Why have I been dogged hither and yon across seas? Come into the coach, I'll tell ye a thing. Godby, says he, coming where Godby stood beside the steersman, lay her on her old course. 'Tis Merrilies takes the next watch, I think. Tell him to warn me as soon as we raise her accursed topsails.
What, says I, as we climb from the lofty poop, you think she will dog us still, then?
I know it, Martin, says he gloomily, and so brought me into a smallish cabin under the top gallant poop. Here were bunks to larboard and starboard, with a table midway furnished with calendars, charts, a cross staff, an astrolabe, with globes and the like, while against the walls stood rows of cavaliers, musketoons, and fusees, set in racks very orderly.
"Aye, shipmate," says he, noting my gaze, "every firelock aboard is either here or in the arms chest or the roundhouse below, and our powder is all stored well aft, by reason that I am a cautious man, do you see? Sit ye, Martin. Now, as to this black ship. First of all, she fouls us in the river, the which was no accident, Martin, though just what the motive was I'm yet a-seeking. Second, as she drifted past us, whom should I see aboard her but Abnegation Mings? Pulled trigger a moment too late, but winged another of the rogues. Third, when we'd repaired our damage and got us clear of the river, what should we see but this same black ship hove short, waiting for us? For she presently stands after us, and so she's dogged us ever since, and so dog us she will to the world's end, unless I can bring her to action.
She's a fighting ship by her looks and heavily armed, says I.
So are we, Martin.
And our men, Adam?
Ah, says he, pinching his chin, there it is, Martin, there it is. Look ye, shipmate, in all this crew there are no more than 20 men I can count on, nay, less. 10 only can I swear by. I see now, here's you and Merrilies and Godby, here's Farnaby and Toby Hud the boatswain, Treliving the carpenter and McLean his mate, here's Robbins and Perks and Taffery the armorer, good mariners all. These I can trust, shipmate, but never another one.
And what of the captain, Sir Rupert Daring?
That, Martin, says Penfeather, snapping his fingers, a very gentlemanlike fool, do you see, a bladder of air like his three fellows. So we have 4 gentlemen aboard, Adam.
Ay, Pryn Cox, all that do nothing but vie in court to her ladyship.
Now looky, Martin, what with one thing or another, and this hell-fire ship on our heels in especial, there's stir and disaffection among the crew, a whispering of corners that I don't like, and which is apt to spread unless looked to. Wherefore this morning I ordered a certain red-haired rascal 50 lashes athwart a gun, but the boatswain had laid on but poor 10, and the fellow roaring lustily, when into the tween decks cometh my lady, and mighty taking, seeing the rogue's back a little bloody, ordered him freed, and thereafter cossets him with dainties from her own table. Lord love ye. Which cometh a woman aboard ship? And here Adam sighed, mighty dismal.
Why then, says I, here's work for me, belike.
As how, Martin?
Nay, leave it to me. Being little better than rogue myself, I should know how to outmatch roguery.
Meaning you'll spy on em, shipmate, and lie and cousin and join fellowship with em if need be. Howbeit there's aught afoot, I'll bottom it, one rascally fashion or t'other.
'Tis desperate risk, Martin, and should they suspicion you?
Why, look at em, my life's none so sweet or precious that I'd cherish it in lavender.
Besides, I've a feeling I may not die until, at least not yet.
Wait, says he as I rose. Bide a while, Martin. And opening beneath his bunk a locker, he took thence a shirt of fine chain work like that he himself wore. Shaking my head, I would have put it by, but he caught my arm in his powerful grip and shook me insistent.
Take it, Martin, says he, take it, man. 'Tis easy and pleasant as any glove, yet mighty efficacious against point or edge. And you go where knives are sudden.
Stay then, take it for my sake, shipmate, since trusty comrades be few and mighty hard to come by. So in the end, I did it on beneath my doublet and found it to irk me nothing.
And now what? He questioned as I opened the door.
Sleep, says I, yawning. There's a bunk yonder, Martin, says he, eyeing me twixt narrowed lids.
Nay, I'm for my dog hole, Adam.
You seem to sleep much and mighty well, despite stench and rat, shipmate.
I'm grown used to 'em, says I with another yawn, and as to sleeping, I do little else of late. Tis the dark belike, or bad air, or lack of exercise.
Now, as I rose to be gone, the deck seemed to heave oddly beneath my feet, and the cabin to swing dizzily round, so that I must needs grip at the table to steady myself, while Adam peered at me through a haze, as it were.
"What's here, Martin? Are you sick?" he questioned.
Vertigo, I mumbled. I'll into the air. In a little, the dizziness abating, I got me out on deck and found in the rushing wind mighty comfort and refreshment, while Adam steadied me with his arm.
"Let be," says I, shaking off his hold. "'Twas not. I'll go sleep again."
And waiting for no more, I stumbled down the quarter ladder. But even as I went, the haze seemed to close about me thicker than ever, and groping my way to the ship's side, I sank across the bulwark and was miserably sick. This agony passing, I made my way below until I reached the orlop, but now, feeling my sickness upon me again, I crept away into a dark corner and cast me down there. And lying thus in my misery, I little by little became aware of someone weeping hard by, a desolate sobbing, very pitiful to hear. Insomuch that, maugre my weakness, I got up and going where the sobbing proceeded, presently came upon a small huddled figure, and stooping saw it was a little lad. At my step he started to his knees, elbow upraised, as if expecting a blow.
"Why do you weep, boy?" I questioned. "What's your trouble?"
"Now," says he, cowering away, but taking him by his little thin shoulders, I lifted him into the dim light of a swinging lanthorn and looked into a small, pallid face, swollen and disfigured by cuts and bruises wrought by some brutal hand.
"Who did this?" I demanded.
"Nobody," says he, gulping a sob.
"Who are you?"
"'Tween decks, boy.
How old are you, child?"
At this he stared up at me out of his swollen eyes, then covering his face in ragged sleeve, broke into convulsive sobbing.
"What now?" says I, drawing him beside me. "What now?"
"She used to call me child. My mother." And here his grief choked him. Now as I looked down upon this little pitiful creature, I forgot my sickness in sudden fierce anger.
"Boy," said I, "who's been flogging you? Speak."
"Red Andy," he gasped. "He be always doing of it, he be. Wish I was dead like my mother."
"Jim, ah, Jimmy," roared a voice from somewhere in the gloom forward. "Jim, plague ye. Show a leg, will he?"
Here, and before I could stay him, the boy started up and pattered away, drying his tears as he ran. Now, as I lay there, I kicked off my shoes and hearkened expectant. Thus, all at once, I heard a murmur rising to a wail that ended in a shrill scream, and getting to my feet, I crept stealthily forward. Past main and foremast, I crept, past dark storerooms and cubby holes, and so, to a crack of light and clapping my eye thereto, espied two fellows rolling dice, and beyond them the boy, his hands lashed miserably to a staple in the bulkhead, his little body writhing under the cruel blows of a rope's end wielded by a great red-headed fellow. Now, in my many desperate affrays with my fellow slaves, those two-legged beasts, I had learned that it is the first blow that tells. Wherefore, groping for the latch, I stealthily opened the door, and or ever the red-headed fellow was aware, I was upon him from behind, and giving him no chance for defense, I smote him a buffet under the ear that tumbled him against the bulkhead, whence he sank to hands and knees. Then, while half-dazed, he strove to rise. I kicked him down again, and setting my foot upon his chest, caught up the rope's end he had dropped, and beat him therefore until he roared, until he groaned and lay writhing, face hid beneath his crossed arms. Then, whipping out my knife, I confronted his two mates, the one a doleful, bony man with a squint, the other a small, mean, black-eyed fellow, and a striped shirt, who, closing one bright eye, leered at them with the other. All at once he nodded, and pointing from the knife in my fist to the fellow groaning beneath my foot, drew a long thumb across his own stringing throat and nodded again. Hereupon I stooped above my captive and set the flat of my blade to his forehead just below his thick red hair. "Looky, dog," I panted while he glared up at me beneath his bruised arms. "Set so much as a finger on yon pitiful brat again, and I'll cut a mark in your gallows face you'll last your life out."
"His throat, Cully, quick's the word," breathed a voice in my ear. But now, as I turned and the little black-eyed fellow leaped nimbly back, was a creaking and a groaning of the ladder that led to the main deck above. And down comes a pair of prodigious stout legs, and after these a round body, and last of all a great flat face, small of mouth, small of nose, and with a pair of little quick eyes that winked and blinked betwixt hairless lids. The fat fellow, having got him down the ladder, and with wondrous ease for one of his bulk, stood winking and blinking at me while he patted one of his plump cheeks with plump fingers.
"Love my limbs," says he in soft, high-pitched voice, "perish and plague me. But who's the friend as be a rope-bending of ye, Andy lad? You as be cock of the ship."
Here the fellow beneath my foot essays to curse, but groans instead.
"Bless my guts," says the fat man, blinking harder than ever. "So bad as that, Andy lad? What then has this fine, upstanding cock o' cocks thrashed all the hellfire spirit out of ye, Andy lad? Love my innards, I thought no man aboard could do as much, Andy."
"It jumped me from behind," says the fellow Andy, twixt snarl and groan, and writhing under my prisoning feet.
"And where," says the fat man, smiling at me, "where might you have come from, my bird of price? The boatswain's mate, Samuel Spraggins, is me, friend, Sam for short, called likewise Smiling Sam. Come, come, never scowl on Sam. Nobody ever quarrels with a smiler. I'm friends with everyone, I am, friend."
"Why, then loose the child," says I.
"Child, ha! Huh? Is it this little rogueling you mean, friend?"
As he spoke, and smiling yet, he caught the boy's ear and wrung it twixt vicious thumb and finger, whereupon I whirled the rope's end, but he sprang out of reach with wondrous agility and stood patting plump cheek and smiling more kindly than ever. And while I cut the cords that bound the boy's wrist, who with upflung wondering look at me, sped away into the orlop and was gone.
"Now, Marquis Spraggins," says I, "harm that child again, any of ye. I'll beat your fat carcass to a jelly."
"No, no," quoth he, "you can't quarrel with me. The smiler don't never quarrel with none. You'd never strike Smiling Sam, friend."
"Stand still and see," says I.
But hereupon he retreated to the ladder, and I, feeling my sickness upon me again, contented me by throwing the rope's end at the fellow and stepping out backward, clapping to the door. So with what speed I might, I got me down into the hold and to my dog-hole, and here I saw I had left my lanthorn burning and found in this light strange comfort. Now, being mighty athirst, I reached the demijohn from the corner and drank deep. But the good water tasted ill on my parched tongue. Moreover, the place seemed strangely close and airless, and I in great heat. Wherefore I tore off my sleeve doublet, and kicking off my shoes, cast myself upon my miserable bed. But now, as I lay blinking at the lanthorn, I was seized of a sudden great dread, though of what I knew not. And ever as my drowsiness increased, so grew my fear until, and all at once, I knew that the thing I dreaded was sleep. And fain would I have started up, but even then sleep seized me, and strive how I would, my eyes closed, and I fell into deep and fear-haunted slumber.
Join me here next week for the next chapter of Black Bartlemy's Treasure on Thrilling Tales of Adventure.